Gavaha. The protected cows. Vedaha. The Vedic culture. Avarna Ashrama. Of the Aryan civilization. Of four varnas and four ashramas. Kriyaha. The activities. Tam tam. That. Janapadam. To the city or town. Yata. Go. Sandipayata. Set fire. Arishjata. Cut down all the trees. So, translation. Immediately go wherever there is good protection for the cows and brahmanas and wherever the Vedas are studied in terms of the Varnashrama principles. Set fire to those places and cut from the roots the trees there, which are the source of life. So you can repeat, immediately go. Wherever there is good protection
for the cows and brahmanas,
and wherever the Vedas
are studied in terms
of the Varnashrama principles,
set fire to those places
and cut from the roots
the trees there,
which are the source of life.
So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
The picture of a proper human civilization is indirectly described here. In a perfect human civilization, there must be a class of men fully trained as perfect brahmanas. Similarly, there must be kshatriyas to rule the country very nicely according to the injunctions of the shastras, and there must be vaishyas who can protect the cows. The word gavaha indicates that cows should be given protection. Because the Vedic civilization is lost, cows are not protected, but instead indiscriminately killed in slaughterhouses. Such are the acts of demons. Therefore, this is a demoniac civilization. The Varnashram Dharma mentioned here is essential for human civilization. Unless there is a Brahmana to guide, a Kshatriya to rule perfectly, and a perfect Vaishya to produce food and protect the cows, how will people live peacefully? It is impossible. Another point is that trees also should be given protection. During its lifetime, a tree should not be cut for industrial enterprises. In Kali Yuga, trees are indiscriminately and unnecessarily cut for industry, in particular for paper mills that manufacture a profuse quantity of paper for the publication of demoniac propaganda, nonsensical literature, huge quantities of newspapers, and many other paper products. This is a sign of a demoniac civilization. The cutting of trees is prohibited unless necessary for the service of Lord Vishnu. Yagyartat karmano nyatra lokuyam karma vandanaha. Work done as a sacrifice for Lord Vishnu must be performed, otherwise work binds one to this material world. But if the paper mills stop producing paper, one may argue, how can our ISKCON literature be published? The answer is that the paper mills should manufacture paper only for the publication of ISKCON literature, because ISKCON literature is published for the service of Lord Vishnu. This literature clarifies our relationship with Lord Vishnu, and therefore the publication of ISKCON literature is the performance of yajna. Yajnartat karmano nyatra loko yam karma bandhana. Yajna must be performed as indicated by the superior authorities. The cutting of trees simply to manufacture paper for the publication of unwanted literature is the greatest sinful act. Heavy purport. Yatra yatra dvijo kapo veda varna shama kriyaha tam tam janapadham yata sandipayata vrishchata. So Omagana Timurandasha Dananjana Shalakya Chakshuram Miditam Yenatasmai Shikadaveda Maha.
So, what we're seeing described here, hearing described here, is basically taking place everywhere. And in fact, Srila Prabhupada comments about the cutting trees used to make paper so that so many useless literatures could be produced. Well, the majority of trees on this planet are being cut down, not for paper at this particular point, but cut down for killing cows, which is really interesting. Not, it's sad, but it's interesting. So the, what do I mean by that? That in order to, let's say, produce milk, or not, let's not talk about milk right now, but to in order to produce meat, the cows need a lot of grazing area. And what happens is if you have many, many cows or bulls or bovines, as they may call them, and they need a lot of grazing area, like some areas they may need 4 acres of land or 6 acres of land, depending upon the climate. Of course, in our farm community in New Taliban, the cows only need 2 acres of land to survive, because it's warm all the time. Prabhupada actually was very much in favor of farm communities in warm climates. And you see the farm communities, even the ISKCON farm communities in cold climates, require a lot more subsidies. For example, in Gita Nagari, there's a nice cow protection program going on there. But they actually have one donor who's donated basically hundreds of thousands of dollars to maintain the cows there. And that's why the cow protection is going on there so nicely. Whereas in New Taliban, we're actually producing milk and the cows are being protected. We have probably about 70 or 80 head of cows and bulls. And basically, we basically don't need much of a subsidy at all. So it's interesting, I mean, because the cow protection is best done in warm climate. In any case, the cows need a lot of land. And in order to provide the land for grazing, there's been deforestation in specifically in Brazil and Central America. And the result of that, of course, is not only killing the trees, as Prabhupada comments in the Bhagavad Gita, that a Vaishnava is very upset or angry or intolerant of even an ant being killed. It's quite an interesting statement. Because many times devotees, they don't consider that and they go around, you know, killing bugs. But Prabhupada himself, forbade Shrutakirti to kill a mosquito that was flying around inside the mosquito net. And the only time that Prabhupada allowed the mosquito to be killed was when the mosquito actually started to bite him. Because then you're allowed to kill something or someone. According to the Vedic injunction, if someone is the poison giver, sets fire to your house, or kidnaps your wife, okay. You can kill them in self-defense. Not that you should do some premeditated thing like 3 years after someone kidnaps your wife, kill them. Actually, that happened in ISKCON. There was one devotee whose wife was not specifically kidnapped. I don't find so many instances of women being kidnapped in America. I mean, there are, but amongst the devotees, I haven't found any incidents of that. The wife left voluntarily with this particular guy. And a few months later, the husband, or the ex-husband, whatever you may call him, went and killed the person who took his wife away. And Prabhupada was asked, you know, is this proper? Because it said someone who kidnaps your wife, someone who sets fire, someone who gives poison, etc., should be killed. And Prabhupada said, no, because that is only to be done when one is protecting the wife or protecting the property from being set fire or keeping the poison giver from giving poison. So it's not that you do this ex post facto. You understand? Ex post facto means after the fact. Like if someone were to try to give me poison, I could use force to protect myself. But not later on I would go to his house and shoot him because he tried to give me poison and I was able to protect myself. It's not appropriate. So Prabhupada was very, very strong about this point of not harming any living entity. And the Bhagavad Gita says not even an insect. I remember I was in Dallas, Texas, when Prabhupada visited, and the devotees had cut down a tree that was on top of, I think it's called the Prasadam Room now, that they use the Prasadam Room. And there was it was an oak tree, and they trimmed it, not only cut down, and Prabhupada kept pointing. I was right there at that particular juncture. And Prabhupada kept pointing to it, and basically Sasrupa Maharaj said that it was threatening the roof. And then Prabhupada got really angry. And it didn't actually damage the roof, but it could have damaged the roof. So just cutting down a tree unnecessarily. And, you know, especially, I mean, there's different varieties of trees. I mean, especially trees that give fruit, trees that give shade. At one point, Prabhupada said that, you know, useless trees like pine trees can be cut down to, not simply cut them down, but cut down to make buildings for devotees, things like that. So there's certain types of trees that can be cut down, or in other words, there's a hierarchy. Even amongst animals, we find the cows are at the top of the hierarchy. They're most important because if you kill a cow, the reaction is a cow birth and death for every cow, every hair on the cow. And if you just kill a pig, then it's just one pig life for you. So it's better to spend one life as a pig than billions of lives as a cow. Unless you're a Christian's cow in the spiritual world. So the point is that in order to raise so many cows to be sold in the, practically speaking, one of the largest industries in the world, it is required to have a lot of land. And in order to have a lot of land, you've got to start cutting down what's called slash and burn. You slash the forest in Brazil, the rainforest, which are incidentally providing most of the air for us and preventing global warming. You know, people talk about global warming right now. And you slash them down and you burn them, and there's vast millions of acres being destroyed as we talk, so that people can go to McDonald's and enjoy their Big Macs or their Big Karmas. We should actually have a t-shirt that says Big Mac, Big Karma. That would be a nice t-shirt. So, big death. McKarma, yeah, that's good. McKarma. So they're slashing and burning the trees and killing so many living entities. There's a karmic result, and also there's a result with the Earth's climate. Because people talk about, you know, too much carbon dioxide in the world, which is one of the global warming gases. So guess what? The trees absorb carbon dioxide. That's part of their food when they do photosynthesis. Photosynthesis means that the sun shines down and the leaves of the trees are able to absorb, transform the sunshine into energy, and the trees take on carbon dioxide. And then they give off oxygen. So the Brazilian jungle is called the lungs of the world, basically. So we're getting less oxygen, more carbon dioxide, more global warming gases, and as a result, then there's a change in the Earth's climate. You know, talk about global warming, which basically means a lot of the countries are going to be underwater. There's some countries where they have to displace the entire population, you know, island countries in the Pacific, where they have to displace the entire population because the country is under sea level. And so that means they have to take, everyone in the country becomes a refugee. So far, these countries are very, very small countries, very few people living in the country, so it hasn't been a major problem with displacement. And then the weather patterns are changing. For example, in India this year, it's been the hottest, one of the hottest summers ever. And thousands of people are just dying just from sunstroke because of the weather patterns changing. So the Earth is actually a living entity
I was having a discussion with one of the devotees in Europe, and they were saying, well, there's so many problems in the earth today, in the world today, you know, these ISIS fighters. I was just reading the news yesterday on CNN, how they've practically taken over half of Syria, and they're threatening to take over Baghdad next in Iraq, and it's really cruel, crazy people. So I was explaining it to this particular devotee that all these things are happening in the world because this is like the world is trying to get rid of an invader. That's us. You know, the Earth is this Gaia hypothesis. I don't know if anyone's heard about that before, which means the Earth is actually a living entity. And actually, we say the same thing. That's Bhumi. I mean, the personification Bhumi sometimes appears as a lady, but actually her transcendental body, her body is the Earth planet. And so when you have a body and there's some invaders or some cancer, guess what the body tries to do? It has an immune system. So the immune system of the Earth is actually trying to get rid of us at this particular point. Not us as devotees, because that, for the Earth, devotees are actually a burden of love. Just like for the mother, Prabhupada gives that example, the child is a burden of love, because there's love there. But if you ask me to take care of the child and change the diapers and everything like that, it's just like, get rid of the thing. Now, you know, I obviously wouldn't get rid of him. Yeah, I'd turn him over to some nice lady. But it wouldn't be a burden of love. I mean, if I heard a child crying in the middle of the night, you know, I would just like go to the woods and leave the child in the house. Because there's no love there. So in the same way, you know, the earth... I mean, like, Jagat, if you put a little baby in your ashram or something like that, you know, it's not your baby. There's no love. I'm not saying you don't have love, but it would be like that. So the earth planet, for devotees, because the devotees are like, you know, they worship Bhumi. We actually do. I mean, if you go to South India, they have the deities Bhu and Shri next to Balaji. Bhu is Bhu Devi, the earth planet. I mean, so she's just like second to Lakshmi. So the devotees actually worship or accept the earth as a person and are very careful in dealing with the earth planet. Whereas the non-devotees, they just want to exploit the earth. I mean, of course, you have the typical example of Hiranyaksha. Who probably compared to the modern oil people, you know, the people who drill in the earth and disturb the functioning of the earth, the circulation of the earth. You know, imagine if you had like, I mean, just like I've had recently some bugs who drill into my body. You know, I have so many little sores. And they disturb me so much. You know, they're called mosquitoes or sand flies. Or now they have the newest addition is the no-see-ums. You ever heard about that before? They go, no-see-ums. That means you don't see them. So it's very disturbing, you know, and I'm seeking ways like to spray myself or do something to kill the damn creatures. So we're doing that to the earth planet. And the earth is a person, Gaia, you know, Bhumi. And so you're burning down. It's just like someone burning your hair. You understand? So it's sometimes described that the hair, even in the universal form, the trees are considered to be like the hair of the universal form. But the trees are like the hair on the earth. So people are burning down the trees, killing the cows, and, of course, also getting rid of the Brahmins, you know, people who actually want to propagate spiritual values. Prabhupada says also in the Gita that the Brahmins are the symbol of spiritual education, and the cows are the symbol of the most valuable food. So they're acting in a completely opposite way. And Hiranyakashipu is advising his followers to do that. But nowadays, Hiranyakashipu's followers wouldn't have to do anything. They would say to Hiranyakashipu, hey, boss, it's already done. Isn't it? So they would have it easy. In other words, our whole culture is being run by Hiranyakashipu. So the, or worse, or the followers of Hiranyakashipu. As Prabhupada said, it's a demoniac civilization. I mean, these are strong words to use. I mean, sometimes if people who are not in a Krishna conscious movement read this, and where Prabhupada says that trees can only be cut down to make paper for ISKCON literature. I mean, that appears like really fanatic, you know, cult-like and everything like that, but it's fact. Because the only justification for harming any living entity, whether it's a tree, whether it's a piece of broccoli, or an artichoke, is to use it in Krishna's service. There's no other justification. There is no other, because otherwise you're a thief. And we hear that in the Asopanishad, right? Ishabhashamidam sarvam. Yadkim cha jagajam jagat. Atena chaktena bunjada magradha kashasvidana. Everything is owned and controlled. It's all Krishna's property. And the example sometimes I give in that respect is that if you're borrowing someone else's property, I mean, not borrowing, but if you're working for someone else and you're using their property and you use it for yourself, you're a thief. You're going to get fired at least. And let's say I'm someone's chauffeur. I'm not referring to the Jewish chauffeur where you blow a horn or something. But chauffeur, that's a ram's horn. Let's say I'm someone's, that means someone's driver, a sarati, as they say in Hindi, like Krishna was partha sarati. Let's say I'm someone's driver and I'm driving their Mercedes, and then that's my job. And so as soon as they turn their back, I take their Mercedes and do something else with it, you know, go to the bar, pick up prostitutes or something like that, you know, then I'll lose my job, or even if I steal the car. So basically, someone who uses Krishna's energy for anything else other than Krishna's service is a thief. I mean, either directly or indirectly, we don't want to be too fanatic, you know. Indirectly means, you know, you're taking care of your family. That's fine. That's Krishna's service. I mean, we're not saying that you should simply be using your car to pick up flowers for the deities. I mean, use your car for other things that are connected indirectly with Krishna's service, which is fine. So, one's a thief. And so anyone who, especially one who kills a living entity, the Prabhupada said, we are not preaching vegetarianism, we are preaching Krishnarianism, or whatever. Krishnatarianism. We are preaching Krishnatarianism. I mean, Prabhupada didn't like it so much when people would put articles in Back to Godhead or talk about all the violence that is done in the slaughterhouses. And we don't, you know, we just don't go around pushing these mundane issues. I mean, even that is a mundane issue. If you're simply interested in protecting cows but not engaging cows in Krishna's service. Because Prabhupada actually said, as far as engaging cows and oxen in Krishna's service, he said it's important to train the oxen too. Prabhupada said if you don't train the oxen and utilize the oxen, you're going to want to kill them. Because they're just going to be sitting around getting fat. You know, if you had a devotee in the temple just sitting around getting fat, you'd want to kill them. Not really. You want to kick them out of the temple. You want to kick them out of the temple. I know that I was just visiting a farm community, and they would be devoted to do 7 hours of work a day, except for the pregnant ladies and ladies with small children. So in other words, if something or is not being done for Krishna, then it's simple. Basically simple. Well, of course, there may be motive goodness stuff where you're not doing things for Krishna, but it's sinful in the sense that it's disobeying the Lord's instruction. So whether it's killing or whether it's any activity, it's all meant to be done for Krishna. So this is the meaning of Prabhupada's statement there about, you know, trees should only be utilized or cut down for paper. So how do we get from here to there? The question is, you know, nowadays we have this society, which is completely backwards. Instead of doing everything for Krishna, everything is being done for sense gratification. The Shudras are the ones who are in charge of basically everything. People are voting, even in democracy. Because of, what does a Shudra mean? Someone who laments, someone who just functions on the basis of attraction and repulsion. You know, immediate attraction and repulsion. I remember there was a story of the first democracy in Athens, you know, Greece. And it was actually a complete democracy that all the free citizens got a chance to vote. Free citizens means the men who were own property and who were, you know, who were actually Greeks. You know, the slaves didn't get a chance to vote. The women didn't get a chance to vote. I mean, the women were just considered there for having babies. That's it. That's their only, and perhaps cooking or something. So, look at that chauvinistic society. That even they would make the conservative elements of ISKCON embarrassed, the Greek society. So they had this democracy where the people would meet and they would vote on the laws. And because Kalo Shudra Sambhava, everybody in Kali Yuga Shudra, they'd be changing the laws every day. You know, does this sound like a good law? No, let's change it today. You know, I feel like this. You know, just like, I feel like this. That's Shudra, you know, because everything's just like emotions, like an ocean of emotions, or like waves of emotions. And it's a very unstable situation. So society is like that. It's a bunch of Shudras. So we have to, Kalo Shudra Sambhavat, and as the Vedic literatures tell us, samskara bhavat vijam. No one can become more than a sudra without having some sort of samskara. And even dvija means twice born, but not necessarily just Brahman. Because you got the higher elements of society, that is the Brahman, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, they're all considered dvija, or twice born. That's why you see Nanda Maharaj wearing a Brahman thread, or a sacred thread. Actually, with a Vaishya, wouldn't be considered a Brahman thread, it would be considered a sacred thread. So you need some samskaras. Samskara basically means a reformatory practice that changes someone's consciousness. That's a samskara. And so in Kali Yuga, the most effective samskara is the chanting of Krishna's names. Kalo Nishteva, 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 Gatiranyatai. Everybody has memorized that verse from the Brihadnagadi Purana, isn't it? Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam. There is no other way. It's like here in the Bible, I'm the way, the truth, and the light. And no one comes to the Father but through me. So we say the same thing. The holy name is the way, the truth, and the light, and nobody comes to the Father but through the chanting of Krishna's holy names. So we have to seek some way, like by hook or crook, or, you know, dressing up as Krishna West dress, or Krishna East dress, or Krishna Chinese dress, or I don't know, or standing upside down, or dressing as a clown, as Sadhvi does. Sadhvi's not here, I'm sure she's listening. You know, Nitai, she gets people to chant, Nitai, my name is Nitai. And she has this whole song, Nitai Go Ranga. I'm Nitai. N-E-A-T, you know, a neat tie. And my friend is Gauranga. And so she gets people to chant, and that's the only way people's consciousness will change, not by joining the, you know, the animal rights movement or Greenpeace. You know, you have all these Greenpeace, you've heard of that before? That's where they go out and they try to stop the whales from being killed, and then they have their hamburger dinner. After they attack the Japanese whaling ships, then they eat their fish. It's kind of stupid. I mean, why protect this giant fish? Well, a whale's not a fish; he's actually a mammal. But this giant creature in the sea, and eat the small ones. It just doesn't make sense. So anyway. So the only method that we have is the chanting of Krishna's names, and also to show people an example of simple living, high thinking, you know, protecting the cows, utilizing the oxen. Prabhupada actually wanted that. It may not be possible to do it on a large scale in America at present, or in Western countries at present, but there has to be a sort of a microcosmic, a smaller scale display of how it is practical and people are happy living like this. So that is ISKCON's mission, but ultimately the chanting of the holy names is the only thing that will bring people to the point of purification so that they can accept, give up certain things that they're very attached to, like eating the meat. It's an addiction. I mean, it is an addiction because you're getting all these hormones. And people are addicted. There's food addicts. I mean, that's a big thing in America, food addictions. So the only way to get rid of addictions that I know of is to elevate your consciousness and Krishna consciousness. Then your intelligence becomes very strong. That's what does twice born mean? Twice born means not only the ceremony, but you've accepted the Vedic literatures, the directions of the Vedic literatures, the directions of the Brahmanas who are mentioned here, and then you function on the intelligence platform. Even though your feelings, emotions are just like pushing you here and there, vacho vega manasa krodha vega, even though they're pushing you here and there, your intelligence is so strong that you say, no way. You know, even though your tongue is saying, eat it, your intelligence is saying no. So that's the point, that's a samskara. To make the intelligence very strong by the process of purification. So you can actually withstand the pushings and pullings and understand philosophically why something is good for you, good for society, or bad for you, or bad for society. This is the only solution. Anyway, ISKCON has a great mission here to accomplish, and that's Prabhupada's vehicle for changing the world and saving the world. So any questions or comments?
It looks like another application is missing
ISKCON is Prabhupada's vehicle, yeah.
Please close it, then try again.
My phone just talked to me.
There is a proposal that I heard from a that the temple should only use protected by cows. However, there's a little bit of a fallacy there because, for one thing, the milk, the people are killing the cow because they really want the meat. If we stop, you know, and even in Prabhupada's time, he knew what was going on in the slaughterhouse, and he told us, you know, the deities need to have.
Yeah, the deities. The deities need to
have access to protected cow milk.
Well, actually, every temple could have access to protected cow milk. It's very easy. It's very easy, but it costs a lot of money. You can approach a farmer and say that I want to pay for this cow and his calves for the rest of his life. How much is that going to cost me per gallon? You can do that, and it'll probably cost you about $15. Probably cost you about $20 a gallon. If you pay the price, this is a whole discussion we've had on the GBC, and the European RGB has actually gotten into some detail, and even the North American Leadership Conference has gotten into detail on this. There's one devotee, Tukaram, is from the West Coast, who's actually come up with a whole analysis of the situation. Very, very nice devotee. He's the Laguna Beach Temple president. And as far as the true cost of milk, because really, when you buy milk at, how much does it cost now per gallon?
You can get a Sam's Club for $3.25.
All right, so let's say you buy it for $3.20 at Sam's Club per gallon, then that cost is being subsidized, in other words, by the killing, ultimately, of the cow to turn into hamburgers, the killing of the calf, the not having to take care of the cow for its whole life. I mean, all these different things, all these different subsidizations are there to enable you to have milk at $3.20 a gallon. So if you take away that subsidy, in other words, you have to take care of the cow for his whole life, you have to take care of whatever calves the cow has for her whole life, then you're going to end up with something like
$15 to $20 a gallon. You know, it's like 4 to 6 times, that was the calculation Tukaram did, 4 to 6 times the actual cost of the milk. In other words, you have subsidization. It's actually, you're taking money from the slaughterhouse, in other words. You're taking money from the slaughterhouse indirectly to pay for your milk. Now, if you actually wanted to have cruelty-free milk, you could approach some farmers in any area, practically, and make a deal with them. That we're adopting this cow and her calves for her whole life. How much will that cost us? You don't even need a farm. You don't personally need a farm. You can do that deal with a farmer. You could, I'm sure, here in North Carolina. I mean, of course, we have a devotee who raises cows and we get the milk for the deities from that cow. But let's say you're in a situation or a location where you didn't have a devotee doing those things. You try your best to make a deal, and then you'll have milk for the deities. And then you'll be paying the true price, and you won't use that much. You know, that's life. Because it's a true price. I mean, if a devotee went into business in the slaughterhouse, let's say not you, but let's say Jagadguru, he opened up a McDonald's, and he said, Maharaj, you know, I want to support the Krishna conscious movement by giving you the profit from McDonald's. I would probably say no. Not that he would do that. I couldn't imagine Jagadguru cooking a McDonald's, flipping hamburgers, but you know, this is. He said, I'll give you money. I'll be able to give you thousands of dollars a year by running McDonald's. Would I accept that? I don't think so. So in essence, or I'll be able to pay for all the boga. Jagadguru said, I'll be able to pay for all the boga for my McDonald's store. I said, no. I mean, the deities won't accept that. Anyway, it's a controversial thing, but there are ways of getting cruelty-free milk even if you don't have your own dairy.